Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Hi, I'm Rob Schneider.
I'm Kevin David Thomas.
I'm sorry, I just stared at Kevin for like 5 minutes
with
without
your
speaking.
Your mouth just wide open, like, what's my line? What
what's
am I doing
my
now?
Line? Help me.
How are
Help
you, Rob?
Me. I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing?
Oh, good.
I just had some mozzarella sticks, so I'm a happy man.
I love a good mozzarella stick, except when the cheese gets hard in the middle, and then I'm like, ugh.
In the middle?
You know, like when it gets when you let them sit too long?
Oh, yeah.
And then you're like,
yeah, I like this is what we call first world problems.
Amen to that. Amen. I tweeted about that. I was like, you know, why can't Apple just invest in headphones that detangle themselves? Because I feel like half my day I spend detangling. And then I thought, hashtag first world problems. Kev.
I'm surprised.
Like, really get over yourself.
Yes. No, I need my headphones. I know.
But Ryan,
I'm
looking over in the corner. They're tangled. They're tangled again. And I did not leave them that way, but they are now. Anyway.
I wonder what we can do to fix that problem.
Well, they give you that container to put it in, but who has time to wrap it up in that little plastic thing?
I don't have time for that.
Ugh.
I wish there was a way that they could be retractable.
Right.
Like a seatbelt. You know how like a seatbelt?
Yeah. Totally.
I have to go. I have to go patent something. I'll see you later. But before I go, I have to tell you about my show.
What's your favorite thing today?
My favorite thing today is a musicale. It's a CD.
Okay.
And I think the story behind the making of the CD is so fascinating.
Oh, I'm excited.
It's okay, so here we go. It's a musical that came out in the 60s, did not get a cast recording, though, and only got a cast recording in 2004.
What?
Yeah, isn't that interesting? I know. Oh, no, 2003. It got a CD because the writer of the show became very famous in the 2000s, in the late 90s and the early 2000s. And that's what got a CD pushed.
I can't wait.
It is a musical called Sherry.
Do you know? James Lipton. And it was an all-star cast. I have the CD.
Uh-huh.
And it was, because I thought, oh my God, this gem from the 60s.
Right?
Tell the story, because you're right. It's a really great behind-the-scenes story.
Okay, well, and you add on to it, because I'm sure you know more about this than I do. So if you remember, inside the Actor's Studio, the host, James Lipton.
He was like 130.
He was 130. Yeah. I spoke to him on the phone yesterday.
Wait, what?
For a project.
What?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it'll come to fruition, but he was fascinating.
Did you have to like tell like what like Peter would say when you came to the gates and stuff at the end of the phone call? It was like, what's your favorite word? Your favorite sound?
What is your favorite ringtone? What is your least favorite ringtone?
That's wild, Rob.
It was very cool.
That's cool.
I loved watching his show when I was growing up. I loved it. And so I sent him an email and I got a phone call. And I didn't recognize the number, and I picked up, and I was like, hello? And he goes, Mr. Schneider? And I was like, yes. He goes, Jim Lipton.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh.
Totally.
I wrote everything out on blue cards and stacked them up. So anyway, he was, before he was the host of Inside the Actor's Studio, he was actually heavily involved in writing musicals. He worked on a show called Nowhere to Go But Up, which I don't think has a cast recording.
No, but we've talked about it before.
We've talked about it before. Yeah. I think with Jack Fertel, maybe?
Yes, he had a postcard, I believe.
And Sherry, for those of you who don't know, Sherry is a musical version of the great play The Man Who Came to Dinner, which is a fabulous play. They did it. They filmed it a few years ago at Roundabout with Nathan Lane in the leading role, and it's on YouTube. So if you don't know the play, you should know the play. Huh. But the idea of the story is this very eccentric radio personality comes to small town conservative Ohio. He breaks his hip and he's confined to a wheelchair for 6 weeks at this house where he wreaks havoc. So it's
great setup.
Yeah, it's urban world meets country world. It's very funny. He changes the family's life, and it's a lot of fun. It's just a very fun play. Not really produced a lot anymore because a lot of the punchlines in the play were 1930s references. And unless you're an expert on 1930s history, the play doesn't really make you laugh as much. However, it's still done in a lot of high schools and community theaters. Big cast, lots of fun, lots of heart. And so James Lipton and his composer, Lawrence Rosenthal, they decided that they were going to musicalize it. It went through some trouble out of town. George Sanders, who probably people remember as Addison DeWitt in All About Eve, he's the critic. He was supposed to play the leading character, who's the guy who's confined to the wheelchair. He quit when his wife got sick, so they got another guy in there. They fired the choreographer out of town. They fired the director out of town. So lots of trouble.
Wow.
So anyway, show opens up on Broadway, and actually, even though we consider this a why musical, which is, you know, why would you musicalize something that works so well, it's a lot of fun. And actually, what I think it does is it gives the characters a third dimension that the first play is kind of missing.
Uh-huh.
The play itself is very fun and very silly, and the musical actually gives you a heart to latch on to with a lot of these characters, and I think that's what the musical does so well.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I was not around in 1967, but they said there were a lot of funny things. There was a whole wheelchair ballet,
because
the character is supposed to be confined and he really can't get up. So anyway, show opens, closes. Doesn't get a lot of great reviews. Audiences, though, have a really good time at it. And so they decide that they're going to strike the set.
It was like seven performances. I mean, it was
four or something. I don't even have any.
It was like just a couple,
In and
Sherry,
out.
Exclamation mark.
Oh, yeah, Sherry, exclamation point. So they decide that, okay, show's over. So apparently they used to, maybe they still do this. When a show ends, they take all the sets and they take them out to New Jersey.
Yep.
And they burn them.
Oh, but they put them in storage.
No, back then they would burn them. So they would just get rid of the sets.
Wow.
So they did that. And James Lipton calls up. And this was in the 60s. And he calls up and he says, hey, listen, I don't have all the orchestrations and the score of the show. Did anyone pick one up from the theater? And they said, well, it was in a trunk. I think it was on the truck that went to New Jersey. So for years, people had assumed that the scores just mistakenly were burned and lost.
Were lost.
Not true. Because a music producer named Robert Shear discovered the trunk in the Library of Congress.
What?
And contacted James Lipton and said, hey, you probably have this already, but we found all the orchestrations.
We got a trunk here with your name on it, Jim.
Sherry,
you know.
Do you want it? And of course, James Lipton said,
would I?
Absolutely. And at this point, he had become a huge hit with Inside the Actor's Studio. Now, this is really interesting. Because he had had such a big name and such a cachet along with him, he amassed an amazing cast to be on. I want to say it's a concept recording. It's not. It's a cast recording.
It feels like they rehearsed it, though. I mean, there's dialogue. There's like, it's two CDs.
It's a two CD set.
Yeah.
It features not only every song that was in the show, plus incidental music, but also songs that were cut from the original production. And I think this was so interesting. They recorded the vocals in New York City, but the orchestra parts were recorded in Bratislava.
Classic.
And Prague over a 3-year span. It took them 3 years.
When they had the money, they'd go
going,
over there and do
right?
it. And they're like, well, we need more money. And then
now, here's the cast. Imagine seeing this cast in an actual live Broadway show. All right, here we go. Nathan Lane.
Reprising or, no.
Go, yeah,
you know,
from
playing the
doing
same
the same role
he did,
role he did in Man Who Came to Dinner. Bernadette Peters.
Amazing.
Carol Burnett. Tom Wopat. Tommy Toon. Mike Myers from SNL fame. Lilias White. Keith David. James Lipton himself. And Phyllis Newman. This
Come
is
on.
The cast.
Yeah.
This is the cast he assembled. And I think the score is absolutely fun. Hmm. It is fantastic. It puts a smile on your face. And it's one of those last joyous 1960 musicals.
When do you get to rediscover a show that was essentially lost?
Absolutely.
You know? I mean, like, lost completely. Literally.
And imagine the joy of thinking, oh, my God, you know, it all got thrown away. It all got burned. And then 30 years later, it shows up on your doorstep.
It's crazy.
And you had the money and the ability to put such an incredible cast together. Yeah. So my favorite thing is Sherry, James Lipton, Lawrence Rosenthal. The CD set is available on iTunes, I think, for like $11. And the cast is amazing.
It's got a great booklet. It has a whole libretto in there. It's It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. Yeah. So that's mine, Sherry.
I'll revisit that again. It's been years it's wonderful. Since I've listened to it.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
I have a CD as well. This is not a show, although I believe it's made into like a song cycle-ish. Ooh. This is a composer. It's of his songs. It is he has written for theater, but he is known for his classical work. And it's he used all Broadway singers, except for one, Broadway singers on this album. And it's just a song cycle. I'm not even going to say cycle. It's just his songs, like a recital, if you will.
Okay.
I'm a huge fan of his work. I've worked with him as his copyist, or as a proofreader and copyist for some of his scores. Another three-name composer.
Oh, okay. Let me guess. It's not Michael John Lacusa.
Nope.
Jonathan Reed.
He wrote a show off Broadway at Playwrights Horizons once again.
Playwrights Horizons always
I'm
for the win
you,
on
man.
This one.
And then like 2003, I want to say.
You know, I'm gonna kick myself when you say
I know. And Kelly O'Hara starting it about a very long book by Proust.
You know what? Here it goes. I'm throwing my hands up. I don't know what this is.
His name is Ricky Ian Gordon.
And it's Myths and Hymns.
It is not. Myths and Hymns is Adam Gettle.
That is wrong, Rob. It is not Myths and
Strike
Hymns.
Two. So it is. No. So
Saturn Returns.
So Ricky,
is that him?
No, it's called Bright Eye Joy. The songs of Ricky Ian Gordon.
I've never heard
Listen,
this.
Then you're going to, because it's really special. Now, Ricky Ian Gordon definitely has a foot in the musical theater world, but he definitely has his whole body in the pool of art song and opera. I mean, he wrote a whole opera for Minnesota Opera called The Grapes, based on The Grapes of Wrath. But Ricky's music is very rooted in all styles. I mean, depending on what the character's going through, he writes for that style. I think right now his passion is definitely more in the opera world. But he wrote My Life with Albertine, was an off-Broadway show that Kelly O'Hara starred in at Playwrights Horizons with Chad Kimball. And his music it's piano-based. Like a lot of his stuff is on the piano first, and then he orchestrates it. But they're art song-ish. I mean, like, they are very smart songs. If you ever listen, friends, Audra McDonald's first album, her very first solo album, where she just did songs of new composers like Adam Gettle, Jason Robert Brown. Ricky was featured prominently on that album. Dream Variations was the opening song on the album that that she did. That is just gorgeous. He writes for strong singers. So on this album, you have Teresa McCarthy, who was in Floyd Collins. She played the girl. She's done a lot of. She was in Titanic as well. Darius DeHaas, Audra McDonald. A lot of people don't realize that Adam Gettle, the composer, the great, you know, the grandson of Richard Rodgers, who wrote, you know, Floyd Collins and Light in the Piazza. He's an incredible singer, a glorious singer, and he was a boy soprano at the Met when he was a kid. But he sings Ricky's songs on this album, as well as the one true classical singer is Dawn Upshaw, and she sings as well.
Oh, yeah,
on this.
I love Dawn Upshaw.
And so these songs range from, you know, show tune style songs to like true art songs with heavy lifting, you know, legit singing, but all have a story, all have an idea. He went through a phase where he took a lot of Langston Hughes poetry and he musicalized them. A song called Audra sings a lot of those songs, like Daybreak in Alabama. I just find this music complex, like in the way that Michael John Lacuzes is, and Adam Gettle for sure. And I think it's interesting that they all kind of came, these Jason Robert Brown, Adam Gettle, Michael John Lacuzes, Ricky Ian Gordon, they all kind of came to prominence at around the same time in the mid-90s, early aughts.
They had three names,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? They definitely changed the way music was used as an art, as a storytelling art form. You know, I think that Michael John and Ricky, for sure, are a little more classical. You get a little more complex. And Adam Gettle, for sure. I mean, their music is way more complex. Jason Robert Brown has more pop influence and all that. His piano parts are just as crazy and hard to play as anything. But they're definitely, like, there's more of a groove to his piano playing, I want to say. But this album, it fascinates me because of the incredible singing on it. And because each song is its own little story. Its own little musical, if you will. And they are almost art song like, but they're beautiful. And I wish he would write more theater music. I remember he was doing a show at the Signature with Judy Kuhn when I was working with him a couple years ago. And then I think it's called Sycamore Trees. And nothing ever happened with it. And I don't know why he doesn't do more theater music. I know he does. He gets commissioned for operas all the time now. And he's a really smart writer. And this album is a great introduction to a contemporary, I'm going to say, theater writer.
I'm going to listen to it right now.
Yeah, you've got simple songs. There's a song called Once I Was that is just simple and sweet. You've got these overflowing songs that the last song of the album is called Joy. A lot of legit, like, you know, if you studied legit in college, you probably heard sopranos sing this song because it's just, Audra just kills it. And it's a fine line between art song and theater song, because art songs were trying to do the same thing that traditionally that theater songs do. In other words, give you an emotion, make you feel something through the music, and tell a story. You know, Strauss and all that, they were doing that. Schubert, oh my, so Ricky is sort of the contemporary of them, of that style, and he's got his foot in both worlds. And I appreciate that, and I wish that he was known more, but he's known in the classical world for sure. But my favorite things, Bright Eyed Joy, the songs of Ricky Ian Gordon.
I feel so smart. That was so interesting.
I feel like I just gave a lecture.
I know. I feel like I should go on to Spark Notes now. And
next
be like,
up, Benjamin Britten. and he was a major influence on Ricky. In fact, Ricky was like, if you want to hear really great theater music and really great smart music, Benjamin Britten. Like, listen to any one of his operas, because that is contemporary. That is acting, singing going on, but extreme singing going on and crazy stories.
That's so, interesting.
Yeah.
Jeez, you know what's so funny? I don't really know a lot about art music. Mm. I know a lot about musical theater and popular music. I don't know anything about art music.
I think I do, because when I went to a music conservatory and I got a Bachelor of Music in musical theater, but for the first 2 years, we really were only allowed to sing legit, not musical theater, like legit, like almost, I mean, I sang like, not like crazy, not Wagner or anything like that, but I sang art songs and stuff.
Baldwin
like that.
Wallace?
Yeah, Baldwin Wallace, yeah, Music yeah. Conservatory. And so the first 2 years we were encouraged to sing classical stuff.
Wow.
To really get that foundation. Like, you know, much like dancers take ballet first and go do your other stuff. But you need that firm foundation before you can, you know, play around in the other stuff.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and
that's so cool.
Yeah, huge fan.
Well, I'm going to go listen to it right now, actually. Yeah,
and the singers are Broadway singers, so that's what's fun about it, is that they can handle it.
That is so
all right,
cool.
What do you got for me today?
I did Sherry.
Oh my gosh! Hello, Kevin.
Obviously, it left such a lasting impression. I can do my whole spiel again.
No. It's good. It's good.
Okay.
It's good.
Well,
I was
fine.
Good. It was good. You nailed it the first time around.
Fine. Well, that's fine. You know, I can tell you about Bratislava and Prague and James Lipton with his blue cards, and
kind of love it.
That's how I wish the whole score was written out on his blue cards.
Just.
Like the whole score was like, I found
like,
a chunk
next one.
Of 100 blue cards.
And then he stopped writing musicals.
Then he stopped. Yeah, I don't think there was anything after Sherry. Because at that point, I think he got into the academic world. Yeah. And he did a lot of producing. I think he, if I'm remembering correctly, I think he produced Jimmy Carter's inaugural.
That gets produced?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those are big deals.
Wow.
You know, Frank Sinatra, I think, produced Reagan's.
I didn't know that those things. I had no
oh,
idea.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And those were big deals. Huh. Do you ever see that? Those are on YouTube,
I
think.
I've never. You're a political guy, though. You love that stuff.
Yeah. In college, I did political science.
I did not know that, Rob.
Yeah. I majored in political science in college.
Where'd you go to college again?
I went to California Lutheran University.
Mm.
It was the only gay Jew on campus. So they kept me in the quad in the cage, and I waved to everybody once in a while. Dear, somebody different. they threw peanuts
at
me.
Oh, man.
But yeah, that's cool. So I went to Cal Lutheran. You went to Baldwin Wallace.
Cherry.
Shout out. I got my master's at Penn State.
Nice.
Shout out. And that's that.
Yeah, that's that.
So I'm going to go listen to, what's the name of yours again?
It's called Bright Eye Joy. Bright Eye Joy.
Bright Eye Joy.
The songs of Ricky and Gordon. And I'm going to go re-listen to Sherry! Exclamation mark.
It's not a musical in the 60s unless there's an exclamation
point. Amen. Donnybrook.
I wonder where that came from.
Sherry?
No, the exclamation point.
Oklahoma?
Yeah.
They were the first one. I mean, I'm sure there are other ones, but they really, it wasn't just Oklahoma. Oklahoma!
That, you know, you got to yell it at everybody.
Yeah,
I wonder why they don't do that today. I'm trying to think, when's the last time? Does
obnoxious.
Something rotten have an exclamation mark?
It seems like
mark?
It should. It would.
Hamilton. That would be great. Cats. I got to get tickets for Cats.
Good luck.
Are you coming with me?
No, we'll think about it.
I was a couple of weeks ago, I saw a show, and I was talking to my friend about, I said, I've never seen a production of Cats.
I actually have not either.
And the person in front of me was like, keep it that way.
People love to hate that show, even
like,
though everyone loved it
God.
At the time.
I was like, now, wait a minute. This thing ran for what, 18 years or something? Well, it can't be that bad.
It'll help the tourist industry.
I'm gonna go see it.
I will.
All right, we'll go together.
All right, sounds good.
All right.
Deal.
Bye.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. These are a few of my favorite things.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.